we need the ministers. Commentary. The news from Texas about the loss of the children in the floods has affected all of us in ways that are indescribable. It's so painful that it is hard even to read stories about it. It causes us to weep and to demand answers, knowing full well that even if we get some, there can never be justice because the children will not return to this world. There is only deep, abiding, terrifying, epically tragic loss. If we feel this way, one can only imagine what it is like for the families. The wound is so deep as to redefine the course of life. Not one minute will pass in the lives of the mothers and fathers of these children when their voices will not be present and their smiles visible in their imaginations. There are simply no words of comfort or explanation that can account for such tragedies. Put yourself in the place of those called up to deal with them as counselors. I'm speaking, of course, of the ministers of faith, the priests, the rabbis, the pastors, and others. These are people who officiate at the funerals, who talk to the moms and dads and siblings, who are asked for sermons in public ceremonies. They are asked to be strong, eloquent, and comforting. Very often such ministers do exactly the right thing. Maybe it is part of training, maybe an extension of a deep spiritual life tracing to study and prayer. I don't know. But I've seen it many times in the face of death and life horror that a minister of faith steps into the space of moral and spiritual void to provide guidance. They speak with calm assurance and somehow help guide families and communities toward acceptance and a strengthened faith. In the secularist rendering of society, these people have no real place. They are displaced by professional counselors, pharmaceutical products, or a turn toward decadence. In real life, there are profound matters of faith and mortality that are constantly with us. The ministers are there too, at birth, marriage, and death, plus many other life transitions. They are essential to a well-lived life because faith itself is essential. The reality of life, with its huge range of joys and deep pains, its triumphs and its devastations, has never been dealt with seriously by any secular ideology. Many systems of thought have tried to replace religion. None have succeeded. They come and go only to be replaced by another ideology that persuades some people in a new generation. Meanwhile, the world's main religious bodies just keep existing, going about their ways, teaching the children, marking the big moments in life, and so on. The ministers are on the front lines, not only in a public role but in a private one too. They need courage to stand there and look into the eyes of the grieving and offer some words of consolation. Doing so requires a special calling. The normal thing most people do in the face of the tragedy of others is to avoid them. People say, "Oh, I don't want to bother that person in grief because they probably need their privacy." What they really mean is, "I'm so terrified of the frightful fate that has befallen that person that I have not the courage to confront it myself." I had a friend who told me that he had a very fast-moving cancer and would soon die. I met with him and told him I would be available anytime to speak. And we spoke at length about dying and death. I also told him something he did not know, namely that as his condition worsened, fewer people would show any interest in him. He was shocked to hear that, but later called to confirm that he had never felt so alone, abandoned by everyone but those to whom he is closest. This is the cruelest feature of the world, that we allow the suffering to fall into isolation simply because we lack the courage to offer friendship and hope. This is because we live in strangely unique times that are terribly bad at dealing with death as an inevitable fate. Mortality is a certain part of life. John Henry Cardinal Newman put it this way: "Death is an inevitable necessity, nor can we ensure to ourselves any certain interval before its coming. The time may be long. But it may also be short. It is plain, a man may die any day. All we can say is, that it is unlikely that he will die. But of this, at least, we are certain, that, come it sooner or later, death is continually on the move towards us. We are ever nearer and nearer to it. Every morning we rise, we are nearer that grave in which there is no work, nor device, than we were. We are now nearer the grave than when we entered this. thus life is ever crumbling away under us. What should we say to a man who was placed on some precipitous ground, which was ever crumbling under his feet, and affording less and less secure footing, yet was careless about it? That is the whole of our culture today, incredibly careless about this topic. To recognize the inevitability of death means confessing that there are limits to our power to manufacture a reality for ourselves, a hard stop to the capacity of the human mind to control the future. It is akin to admitting that certain fundamental facts of the world cannot be changed, no matter how good our drugs, programs, or science. We are powerless to put a final end to mortality. To discover the fountain of youth is a perpetual obsession, one that finds its fulfillment in the drug cults that promise an end to aging. Or we imagine that we can freeze our heads to achieve immortality or perhaps merge ourselves with machines to overcome the decay of our bodies and minds. There is no such thing as natural death anymore. The very notion strikes us as a cop-out. Thus do we insist on always knowing the cause of death, as if it only comes about through an exogenous intervention, like cigarettes, drug abuse, hurricanes, traffic accidents, shootings, and bombs. But even when a person dies of his own accord, we always want to know so that we have some assurance that the same fate will not befall us. The normal response of people to death in our times is fear. It shatters us to know that the end has come for someone. It is far worse when it is innocent children who were only recently preparing for a long life ahead. To observe the cruelness of the early end strikes a kind of metaphysical terror in all of us, partly out of deep sympathy but also because all of us in every stage of life are clinging to our days, hoping for them to last and last. The minister in his person cannot hold such fears. His countenance must be of peace, confidence, and comfort, with all words and energies directed toward the grieving and the profound questions that death raises for all of us. In such times, we hear the word soul often. Science denies its existence, and the word is uttered in academia only with disdain. But the idea itself is the most profound in the English language. Our belief in it draws from the otherwise inexplicable spark of reason, intentionality, purposefulness, learning, and emotion we observe to be unique in human life, and the way in which the presence of others is so essential to our own happiness. To posit the existence of the soul is to believe that our bodies are not the most fundamental part of our being. The notion of the soul also refers to the mysterious presence that those who have passed on from this world continue to have a presence in our own lives. My father died many years ago but continues to reappear in my dreams just as large as life, and my imagination can conjure up his face and words instantly. I feel him around me constantly, his soul living even though his body is gone. And our religious traditions have long discerned the existence of an eternal space where all these precious souls continue to live and watch. In some traditions of faith, we are called to pray for these souls so that they might find themselves in a happy place in the presence of their Creator. The psalmist observes the ways in which our years come to an end like a sigh. Our plea now is always the same, please not yet. And yet eventually, for all of the living, that plea will go unheard. We will be taken from this place and enter another, leaving only the memory of our lives. For all that we may accomplish in the public sphere during our lives, for all the ways in which we make an impact on the larger world, it is those for whom our voices will continue to speak that should primarily concern us, our families and loved ones. Those girls at the summer camp in Texas have souls and spirits that live in the lives of their families. Their memories alone will make the world a better place, and they are undoubtedly in paradise now with their Creator. The ministers among the survivors are those called up to explain the inexplicable, to comfort those who are despairing, to find the meaning in the senselessness of the entire hideous episode. They will step up bravely and do and say what is necessary now. They have a calling. It is not mine and probably not yours, but they serve an invaluable purpose in our world. Now and always.